This is CliffCentral.com.
Grant, I need to make a critical business decision. We've been expanding rapidly, and my gut feel tells me that we should be investing for growth. But I need to put some financial science behind that gut feel of mine.
Don't you have a financial manager or director that can help you with that?
But isn't that rather expensive?
It doesn't have to be. Why don't you contact the finance team? They're a consultancy that can provide you with a part-time financial manager or director at a fraction of the cost of a full-time resource.
Go to thefinanceteam.co.za.
Welcome to our business masterclass. I'm Richard Angus, CEO of the finance team, your part-time financial executive solution. Joining me in studio as part of our panel is Leandie Streeter, business coach and guide from Rose Corp. Welcome, Leandie.
Thank you, Richard.
In this first half hour, our business skills conversation is brought to you in association with USB Ed. Last week, we talked about gearing for the Internet of Things. Is South Africa actually ready for this? Today's theme, we're focusing on ethics again, the role of ethics training. If I can remind you, our hashtag keep ethics alive, all one word. Joining us in studio is our guest, as always, Cynthia Schoeman of the Ethics Monitor.
Thank you.
Nice to have you with us again, Cynthia. So, the question of ethics training, I mean, Cynthia, why do we even need ethics training? I mean, surely everybody knows when they're doing something wrong. They should know this.
I think your point is absolutely spot on, that ethics training is different to other areas of training where we're training to build knowledge and understanding. Your point exactly. Do we know anyone who doesn't understand corruption's wrong, fraud's wrong, whatever the example is? The nuance then with ethics training is what I call a knowing-doing gap. Mm. We've already got the knowledge, but there's a gap in terms of the doing. So the training is really one of the interventions we should be using to influence people's choices, to influence how they behave, given that they've already got the knowledge.
Now, you make the statement, they've already got the knowledge. Doesn't that make a... what do you call it? A presupposition? I'm trying to think of the right word for that. It makes the assumption that people intuitively have the same value set, that taking the cell phone from the desk here is wrong. Now, that's an assumption, and I think we all make that assumption, and we all judge by our own value set per se. Is that a valid construct? So you experience this all day, every day.
Yeah, it's a hugely pertinent point in this field, because given that, as we just said, that the training is focused on guiding your choices, one of the challenges to that choice is exactly your point, that people are coming into the workplace from vastly different personal experiences, backgrounds, cultures, you name it. And not only can, but almost certainly will have a wide range of values. And for someone, it's not that they don't understand pinching your cell phone is wrong. That's not the gap. They are more inclined, for whatever reason, to make another choice. So here again, that's where training or a training intervention comes in, is to really reinforce what is acceptable conduct in the organization and what's not.
Mm. So, I mean, how does one go about train? I mean, in my mind, it's almost like training the untrainable. I mean, can you do? I mean, you're talking ethics training, and we labeled this, you know, the role of ethics training, but is it training, actually?
No.
It's not.
It's in fact a word that I increasingly avoid using, because training implies someone's coming in there with the knowledge and they're going to tell you. Mm. And that's not a useful framework at all.
Yeah. I mean, it's you're not a parent here.
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially for some of those companies out there. And yeah. So what... if you want a product that is very successful in our training suite, is ethics conversations.
Right.
Okay. So we want to have conversations.
Yes.
About how we behave in certain circumstances. Almost a learn by doing. Learn by let's call it reference and example.
Well, it creates the opportunity for people to, over a short period of time, to really apply their mind to ethics. Not to, is corruption right or wrong? we've already got that. But to apply their mind to the concepts, to what is the implication of this? What is my role in this? Do I have a responsibility? Does ethics matter for me? So it and the ethics conversation, let me interrupt myself, should be ongoing. But what it then lends itself to is that people start to make, if you want more thoughtful choices, They're not doing the knee-jerk, you know, instant gratification. It's a new cell phone. Why wouldn't I? It adds that deeper level of consideration and a greater level of awareness. Having said that, it's not the perfect panacea, but it can be a very valuable engagement.
Now, I mean, you know, I'm sitting here thinking, well, you know, ethics training relevant. Yes, needed, yes. Seen it around in the corporate world, yes. Mm-hmm. Aware that many corporates have it, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at the headlines, was it successful? I'm asking myself, you know. So, unfortunately, and you know, we always seem to come back to this conversation, but, you know, there's a few brands out there that right now, if I was the ethics training companies, I would go, So on my list of potential clients, assuming they're still there by the time things are over, you know, KPMG's on my list of companies that possibly need a little bit of support in this world. Eskom is on my list.
Indeed.
Of a number of state-owned enterprises are on my list.
Yeah.
The SAPs of the world are on my list. Mm. The McKinsey's of the world are on my list.
Mm.
And I kind of go, But here's my problem. I can go and look around, and I won't go into the ethics training space and say who did the training in these spaces, but I'm pretty sure they had people walking in there and being paid for an outcome, and training and engagement happened. So what went wrong?
Well, I think two responses to that are important. One is that the ethics training is often really minimal.
Mm.
Do you know, if does a company send all their people, I mean executives all the way down, even once a year in ethics training? Almost certainly not. They think if a cluster of them have sort of had a two-hour session on it once a year, you know, they feel like they've done something extraordinary.
Mm.
And I often think comparisons are interesting because if ethics is an add-on in your business, if it's some sort of thing that we'll draw in when and if it's convenient as an add-on, then you know what? That 2 hours every now and again is probably fine. But if we look at a comparison like, for example, safety in the mining industry, and we've watched the transition where safety was an add-on, it's now core. To what extent do they do safety training? Well, I can tell you, you can't walk onto site without going through a safety briefing. So the time and focus and quality of what they're doing is just in a different league to the sort of grudge 2 hours or half a day that an organization might devote for some of their staff. And here's the other response to your comment. Ask me if the executives are doing this. Mostly not. Mostly not.
They're probably saying, I'm too busy.
Yes.
I've got other business issues that are pressing, real business issues will be their choice of words. I've got real business issues to deal with. I can't deal with this esoteric stuff.
Yes, yes, yes. Mm.
And I mean, I guess the point goes to, and I mean, we'll laugh about this comment, you know, but KPMG sponsored the ethics training course.
Yes, yes.
So, like, how does this work? I mean, surely they don't understand the importance of ethics. They sponsored the ethics training course.
Yeah, but, you know, I pointed out to someone I was in conversation with recently who said, but KPMG also sponsored ethics conferences. I said, yeah, well, let's think of that. If I sponsored a golf day, does that make me a great golfer? I'm thinking not.
Yeah, okay. 2 points for that one. So I guess that gets to the point of, you know, no matter who you are, having your name attached to, let's call it, certain outward behaviors, like I sponsored an event or I've got training on the schedule, doesn't necessarily mean that it has been effective and it has been inculcated into the organizational, let's call it DNA.
Yes.
So how do you make sure that you get the right ethics, let's call it DNA adjustments, to happen from a training perspective? Give us some insights into the type of things that you need to be doing, the practical stuff that, and let's talk now about smaller businesses. You know, we're not talking here about, you know, SA breweries here. Let's talk about, you know, the 50, 60 man company that needs to worry about ethics and doing the right stuff. What should they be doing? How should they be positioning this? What should they be thinking of? Give us some insights.
Well, the first point is, let's go back to your previous comment and drop the training word, but we've already made that. The first recognition is that ethics training, whatever we want to call
it. Ethics conversations. Let's say ethics conversations.
Is not in and of itself sufficient to build an ethical culture, to create that DNA. It is a very useful contributor to that, but it is simply one facet of it. In addition to that, one needs to look at, for example, how you're incorporating ethics into your organization. Now, even at a small organization, they might well have the ethics policies. Yay, tick. Not a huge tick, but a tick. It does need to be there. Mm. But here's a simple question. Is ethics on the agenda at any of their management or board meetings? I don't mean is it brought up, is it literally on the agenda? Because we've all sat in board meetings. If it's not on the agenda, it is not being discussed. Mm. Mm. And it's as simple as that.
And in fact, it's not the item that's under general.
Oh, yeah. By the time general comes, everyone's looking at their watch and they're saying, no, because they're halfway out the door anyway.
Yeah. Okay, so how does a small entity, let's get back to the small entity, how do they have quality conversations about ethics? How do they practically do this?
You know, you can literally, not unlike the interviews that you've been hosting, they can literally script the questions that once a month there is a conversation around a particular facet of ethics, exactly as we've been doing. And what it does is it simply creates a space where, if you want, we're obliged to apply our mind to it beyond the obvious knee jerk. Now, it doesn't mean, having said that, that would avoid a problem. But it does mean that when a problem arises, actually you've already applied your mind to some extent. So you are that much better prepared. And collectively, you can start looking at what are the innovative solutions in this business that would hashtag keep ethics alive.
Mm. Now, I think to myself, you know, I've been in corporate environments where we've talked about ethics and, you know, we talk about, so what are my ethical responsibilities and, might I say, what are my ethical responsibilities, wait for it, as a CASA?
I got that.
Let's not go there. You know, how does one impart a culture of ethical awareness as part of that conversational space? And one of the things that I found most difficult is that we all know what the response is when we are faced with the conversation and the actual, let's call it practical, you know, here's a scenario, play it out, what would you do? We all have the textbook answers.
Yes.
Okay. But then when the real event occurs and somebody's profit line is going to be impacted by saying, no, sorry, we don't do business like that. Mm. Or no, we're not going to accept that deal because we know there's a backhander being paid, or we're not going to involve ourselves in a backhander, therefore we're going to lose that business. Or we're being told that the only way this is going to be successful is if you do business with company X, Y, or Z.
Yes.
You know, when that happens and people's bonuses are on the line and performance measurement is tight and, you know, all the pressure is on, I think people, you know, they make the decision quite quickly, let me call it, in the moment of the role play.
Yes.
But when it comes to life and real engagement, sometimes this world gets a little bit of maybe that's a little bit harder to deal with. In your experience, what is the best way to ensure that we don't have this like schizophrenia of, I know what the right thing to do is, but when I'm pushed to the brink of making the decision, I go with the flow. How does one avoid that schizophrenic insight?
There are a couple of answers. One has to do with leadership and the core rationale, if you want, of the business. And it's around saying, have you within the organization established ethics as being of sufficient and greater value that it will be an automatic first choice? And if you haven't, if you haven't embedded ethics, then you run that risk that the decision will go the wrong way. Let me add to that and say what also encourages the decision to go the wrong way is that often organizations, and I think unintentionally, have got reward systems, have got success criteria that actually don't recognize ethics. They recognize sales or profits or whatever. And then, you know, if your incentive system is based on that, you look at it and say, what works for me? I'm rewarded for doing X. I need to cut a few corners? Yeah, but that's not what the reward system's about. Right.
So we perverse incentives is the word that flies around.
And I think that that's also looking at, we've got the obvious intended outcome of the incentives, but I think that leadership have to say, especially in the ethical context, what's the unintended outcome of this reward success mechanism?
And just with regards to that, I think in today's complex business environment where it does come down to not just being efficient, but lead, you know, sales generation or revenue generation, incentivizing people to sell, performance, talent retention, not just acquisition, and so many complicated aspects playing with one another to create a successful organization. I'm quite interested to know, with regards to the embedment of these kinds of conversations, ethics conversations, who do you believe are the most powerful stakeholders besides leadership? Because of course we know leadership sets, you know, they're the trailblazers, they light the way as the ultimate champions. But if we had to look at the stakeholders across a business, large business as well as some of the smaller guys that are starting to formalize, Who would you say would play a very important role in igniting the ethics conversations in the organization? And what would you expect from them in terms of showing up? How do they need to show up?
It's a great question. And you could argue that all stakeholders in a business, whether you're the customer, the supplier, or whether you're an internal stakeholder like an employee, all of you share an absolute vested interest with the organization in it being ethical. I'll qualify that in a moment. But I think what your point raises so very nicely is that the organization is expected to do this, and primarily the leadership, and none of the other stakeholders are being looked to play a role in this regard at all.
Right.
The real insight out of your question is if we look at employees, and if I posed a question to a group of employees about ethics, and I said them in terms of ethics, tell me, what's in it for you? You know the YIFM question, what's in it for me?
Of course.
No, but we're not asking this question, and it's a really big deal. Because if you took the time, for example, in one of your ethics conversations, to literally ask your employees, ethics, what's in it for you? In terms of working for an ethical organization, the wonderful response you're almost certainly going to get is that employees come to the realization that given a choice, they would want to work for an ethical organization. Why? Because they're treated with respect, they're treated fairly, they're recognized appropriately, they're rewarded fairly. All those things, the environment is high trust environment, great reliability. Yeah, I could continue going, but I think the point is made. So what we're not making clear enough is that ethics doesn't just make great sense for organizations.
Right.
It makes great sense for employees. I certainly would want to be a supplier to a company that's ethical because, you know what? It means I get paid and timeously.
Right.
But those voices are not being adequately raised at all.
Absolutely. And what also comes up for me is, I love your insight there, is because it's gone beyond my initial sort of just looking at the employee stakeholders within the employees inside the organizations. It's extended that, you know, to our suppliers, to our various other stakeholders in terms of bodies and associations we belong to, etc. But also with regards to that, what comes up is it becomes easier to become accountable and to really make it your own. Because for me, it's also, how does this stuff become, you know, how do these things come alive? So we can have wonderful conversations. We can feel great about it. But like Richard said earlier on, you know, when the pressure is on, yes, what do you do?
Yes.
And how deeply do you need to entrench this from a values perspective, create that space where I'm, you know, standing up for the right thing is not frowned upon, or it doesn't become a political gameplay. It really is about doing the right thing, and I'm empowered and I feel accountable and I feel that it's okay for me to do that. How deep does this need to go, and how many kinds of what kind of interventions, how frequently need to happen to start embedding this kind of behavior?
I think your point is really well made, that you not only need to be empowered to make the right call, you need to have the assurance that not only will someone have your back, but someone will actually recognize it and say, hey, great decision. Geez, I can tell you work for this company. Right. So there's got to be real recognition for it. In terms of, you know, how many interventions do you need? I mean, people have got real jobs to do. Of course, I get that. So in terms of, for example, bringing in external providers to speak to ethics training, I think that that's a valuable inclusion during the course of the year. Right. But I come back to saying that within departments, within divisions, within teams, ethics should be on that agenda. When you're looking at that new deal, when you're looking at that expansion, when you're looking at those new sales targets, the question should always be in there, guys, does this fit in with our values? Is this promoting the ethical behavior we want? Now, this is not, it's a 2-second question. So it's not onerous, and whether this applies to a large organization or a small, it's simply creating those questions at all the key points that then has the outcome of keeping ethics alive. Again, you still need to embed it in processes and practices, but that would go an enormously long way to people recognizing and saying, you work for this company. They're really serious about ethics. This is not tick box stuff here. They look at their major initiatives and they ask the question.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, there's that risk of, let me call it, the tick box. And then there's also the elements of, you know, we're almost true to what we say we are. I mean, let's take, and I'll use some examples. There are state-owned enterprises. I won't name who, but I will tell you it's a state-owned enterprise.
Yes.
Where I personally know that people are faced with conflicts like, you know, you will tell the parliamentary committee the following information or the following view.
Mm.
And it's not the valid truth.
Yes. Mm.
And the person on the other side gets faced with this question of, or the scenario of, do I tell the truth and what's really going on and face the reality that I will get fired versus I now toe the company line. And you know, I start going, wow, you know, when those sort of things are blatantly out there and people know about it and people are talking about it, you just kind of go, wow, has the issue of ethics moved to an entirely different level that you know, conversations are, or people are being told, you will say the following. And I mean, let's not joke about this. We all know the, you know, when the bosses are coming around to come and walk through in the business, you know, tidy your desks, make sure this is right, make sure you're dressed appropriately. I mean, how many times has that not happened in organizations? Think about this. I mean, the reality, weren't you doing exactly the same? Wasn't the ethical message, we dress this up when we have somebody
very
coming
true.
And look. Ethically, there's no difference between the company that where the executives or the managers say, get your dress smartened up and dress appropriately for when the CEO is going to do a walkthrough in the business, and the guys who say, listen, lie to the parliamentary standing committee on whatever.
Well, like the scale is
yes, the scale is different, I agree. Mm. But the my comment is, you know, doesn't make a difference if it's R1 million or R5 million, R50 million, or R100 million. Doesn't make a difference. Do ethics split on how many zeros there are behind the number? And my point being that if you have the clean the desk policy when the boss is coming around in the SOE.
Yes.
Let's just pick on the SOE,
yes.
One business. And at the same, because they also reporting to the parliamentary committee, you can't say, hey, guys, present a fake picture of reality to the CEO when he walks around and say, but that's cool. And then go, but telling the CEO, telling somebody in the executive team to tell the parliamentary standing committee an incorrect fact or bend the truth.
Yes.
Fundamentally, I'm going, well, hold on a second, people. That's one and the same conversation, talking about conversations around ethics inside the organization. You can't say, hey, it's cool to dress the desk and the people to present the picture of beauty and everything's right here.
Yes.
Right. And, you know, yeah, we're doing our jobs right and this is how we live our lives and, you know, we're doing everything right here. Great, you know, false picture, you know. Poster child stuff.
Yes.
And then, you know, lie to the board, lie to the parliamentary committee, pick your accountability framework. And I think that for me just kind of speaks volumes that people, you know, I mean, I always use the saying, and I know you've heard it once before, but I'll repeat it again. What you say, what you do screams so loud, I can't hear a word you're saying.
Exactly.
And and we do this all the time, and leadership does it unconsciously.
Yes.
You know, we walk around. I mean, I've been privy to scenarios where I can see that this has been done.
Right.
And I look at this and I go, I've questioned management. I've said to you guys, desks don't look like this normally, do they? And everybody like looks at me and says, you got this all sorted for me, am I right?
Yes.
And they look at me and they go, yeah. I'm like, thank you. I really appreciate the efforts. And I look at the people, I say, I really appreciate the efforts you've taken to tidy up your space and dress up for my visit. I thank you for the efforts you're putting in to make me feel good about visiting you.
Yeah.
Making it very clear to them that I know what's going on.
Yes.
I appreciate their efforts, but I'm not taken in by the image that's created, and it's not about that. It's about the it's not the truth.
Well, I think
honest conversations.
Exactly, and I think the really challenging situation you raise is where a staff member is being coerced into lying, and let's be clear, it's coerced because if you don't. You know what? It's never mind just that bonus. There's going to be some mysterious charge and you're going to be suspended. And this is not a theoretical conversation. We've seen it happening.
We've seen it happening time and time again.
Yeah.
Cynthia, it's been great to talk about training and let's rather say honest conversations in the workplace around ethics. Next up is our business conversation. Stay with us.
This is CliffCentral.com.